In a media-rich landscape, there is seldom a dull moment of things to talk about in the media. And just in the last few weeks, we've had a couple of hurricanes and the coverage of those, President Trump's DACA decision and the discussions of that, Facebook admitting it ran ads from a Russian troll farm during the election cycle, and the birth of a pro-Hillary website. Add to that the fact that we define media broadly, not just news media, and there's a lot to talk about in this month's edition of Signals and Noise, our media sampler with Precious Yamaguchi and Andrew Gay of the Communications Faculty at Southern Oregon University. Welcome back, Precious.
Hi, good morning.
Welcome back, Andrew.
Thank you.
So let's start with the Facebook purchase of ad time by a Russian troll farm, and not an insignificant amount, $100,000 worth of ads.
$150,000 is, I think, the number, which, you know, it's a lot of money. It sounds like a lot of money, but also for anyone who's run Facebook ads before, it that isn't as much as you might think. Mm-hmm. A Facebook ad, I think the minimum you can spend at all if you wanted to go run an ad right now is $5 per day, and that doesn't get you a whole lot of reach. So, you know, we should probably keep in mind that, you know, it could have been much more if they really wanted to reach a lot of people, but it is not an insignificant amount of money.
Well, but you know, the thing that you expect with Facebook, I think, is if you can get some money, some information out there, good or bad, with dollars, then other people will pick it up and carry it out for you, and they're not paying.
Right, organic reach, that's called. Mm-hmm. Right, and you know, the interesting thing about Facebook is a few years ago, it was very easy for brands or organizations to get organic reach. If you had followers and you posted online, you could reach those followers. Now, Facebook really is money-driven, so you have to pay for ads in order to get organic reach, because they really won't show your own fan stuff. But once the ads are out there, the organic reach starts to grow as well. So that's a really good point, that a lot of people will be seeing this, even if it's not being advertised to them directly through that organic reach.
So trolls have been out on the web for a long time. They go out there and stir up anger among people. Precious, what is there a dimension added here through the fact that this was Facebook?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's cyberspace. So the boundaries of cyberspace are different than maybe what you might find in print media, because trolls or different people outside of the national boundaries or local boundaries are able to access and purchase things that would be different than, say, if you were purchasing an ad in print media that's like more within a state or local or national community. I think that cyberspace, it's not cultureless, that there's all these different types of transculture landscapes in which different cultures and people that you don't think have access to the technology or the site, they do, and they're able to interact through currency or different type of ideas. So we have this big transcultural boundaryless type of site.
So yeah, it is not restricted to one area, one part of the world, anything like that. I noticed the term troll farm used to describe sites and accounts that just want to make people angry and scared, and it goes beyond what the political candidate you hate thinks. I noticed the example of people getting messages from troll farms about chemical plant explosions caused by ISIS, complete with pictures that purported to be from CNN, and they weren't. They were all mm-hmm. faked. And so you can really stoke up a lot of fear and a lot of anger.
Yeah, I think even with Black Lives Matter, people that were not even part of the Black Lives Matter movement within the mm-hmm. United States, different type of troll farms were also putting their voices and trying to kind of stir the pot, create division amongst people on the internet.
And we've seen some of that also with some of the recent disasters, right, that there have been false posts about looting that wasn't taking place, people using pictures from different events. There is a post I saw about a Muslim cleric claiming that a particular organization was denying refugees, but he wasn't even from Houston. They had taken someone's picture and created this completely false narrative. And we're also seeing it about, you know, sharks swimming on highways.
There's all kinds of things out there. Well, which brings up a large question then, and you guys as communications professors probably have to talk about this with your students all the time, is you're receiving the information that is often wrong, or at least misleading, on the very device with which you have access to pretty much all the information in the world. And yet people often respond emotionally first, and then later on when somebody says that might not be right, you might want to check your source, then they do that. I mean, am I on?
Well, right. And it's obviously it's a problem for a lot of people. It's a problem for professionals. Donald Trump's social media director retweeted supposedly a picture of the Miami International Airport underwater. It wasn't a picture of Miami International Airport. It was actually Miami International Airport's Twitter account that responded and said, "That's not us." And so
it turned out to be Mexico City from months ago.
Right, right. Yeah. And so we see that, you know, even so-called professionals in media can be easily duped if they respond emotionally rather than saying, all right, how can I verify this media? How can I find out if this thing that fits my agenda, this thing I want to share with others because it fits the message I want to put out there, how can I find out if it's true?
Yeah, I definitely think people should look at the source in which they're viewing different messages or photos. Is it a reliable source, or is it more like a clickbait type of thing that you're just scrolling through on Facebook? Because sometimes on Facebook or Twitter, they'll just be shocking type of photos that people hope that people click on or retweet.
And the other thing about these ads, you know, or promoted posts is that, you know, for the non, you know, media savvy Facebook user, they think, well, I follow these people. And so if I'm getting this, it must be trustworthy because I've created this circle of people. But again, if it's a promoted post, you might be seeing it even if you never followed this individual or, you know, so it may be coming from outside of your circle. And so you think, oh, I can trust this, but it's not.
Andrew Gay and Precious Yamaguchi are on the communications faculty at Southern Oregon University. They join us for a monthly perusal of things going on in the media. That's all media and not just news. 800-838-3760 if you'd like to join the discussion. jx@jeffnet.org. Just back to the Facebook bots briefly. I mean, if this is spent by a foreign government, foreign entity on behalf of somebody in a campaign, it's illegal, right?
Mm-hmm. I believe so.
Yep. All right, so there's that to go through, too. Facebook admitted this and talked to Congress and the FBI, I noticed. What stops a repeat?
That I don't know.
I don't know either.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's move on to another issue coming up lately. This is the Verit.com, which is purported to be a website for the 65.8 million, which one assumes is the number of people who voted for Hillary Clinton, do you? So what is it that makes this site so noteworthy?
Yeah, so that site came out this week with a lot of fanfare and a lot of blowback, which it kind of ties back right into what we were just saying, is that there's all this right fake news, and some of it is actually fake, and then there's others calling real news fake news. And so Verit claims to be a site that is verifying your news for you, and each piece of media that it posts comes with a Verit authentication code. And so you're supposed to be able to trust, okay, this is real news for me. But it also is explicitly a filter for Hillary Clinton voters. And so someone might go on there and think, oh, good, finally, I voted for Hillary. I don't believe in Donald Trump. I don't believe his fake news line. I want to find media I can trust. But, you know, and that might be true that you're getting media that is at least not false, but it's definitely very filtered. You're getting a single perspective. So, for instance, I was just looking on the site just now, and one of the stories at the beginning of the feed was Hillary Clinton and her voters will never be silenced. Another was Hillary Democrats are the heart and conscience of America. So again, if this is where you're getting your media, you're getting a big pat on the back a lot, and you're not necessarily getting a full picture of what's going on in the world.
And I noticed, too, that the satire came instantly, that the people started putting up verification codes. Did you notice those?
Yeah, and there's a fake Verit Twitter account that's going around threatening to sue everyone. It's pretty funny.
Well, it is funny when you think about Twitter accounts. I mean, the fact is that even Donald Trump's Twitter account is at real Donald Trump.
Right.
Because
mm-hmm.
there are other Donald Trumps mm-hmm. using that name that got there first and reserved it.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and I wonder too, Precious, about as time goes on and you don't really know who to trust. I mean, the fact is when you begin to have small organizations rise up to the stature, at least in some people's eyes, of places that older folks like me would recognize, the New York Times, the Washington Post, you know, if they all sort of get lumped into this general landscape of they're all equal, how do you know which place is going to give you the up and up?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it becomes even more confusing with the Reddit communities, because I feel that Verit is also a bit of a maybe an alternative to people that don't want to be on Reddit, because there's so much political talk about different groups and organizations, and you have your Trump supporters and your Hillary supporters, and they cross over sometimes with different types of trolling on Reddit. So Verit, I feel, is like a move away a bit from the Reddit area, and then with the Verit website, I also feel that when I first saw it, I thought the layout was really strange. But then I was like, okay, these are different type of like cards that you can use
for. It looks like a bunch of business cards.
Yeah.
Basically to a page. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I think that it does become confusing to different generations and age groups of like, well, what am I supposed to look at and how am I supposed to interact with what virtual community?
Some of the satire was funny right out of the gate, you know, as satire can be, you know, like one of the Verit stories purported to be, always got picked last for kickball, and I'm still mad, Timmy.
Yeah, I think, you know, my advice to people always is that you should have a diverse media diet. You know, you should be reading lots of different kinds of media. You should be reading, you know, so-called legacy mainstream media. You should be reading independent media. You should be reading international media. You should look at what, even, you know, media that obviously leans in one direction or the other, just make sure you get some balance between them. If you're going to be looking at Fox News, also be looking at MSNBC and be keeping an eye on what is the media landscape as a whole, because I think that's much more effective than trying to go out and say, well, what is the one media source I can always trust? I mean, sure, I generally trust NPR, but I don't even think it's necessarily a good idea to get all of your media from NPR. You should get that, you know, well-rounded diet.
It's a good idea, and I will say, too, that if you spend a day looking at news coming out of the White House and you're just going to the Washington Post and the New York Times sites, then go to Fox News and see where that story ends up in
their
lineup.
Totally different.
Yeah. The actual placement of stories can be extremely different. Plus, there's usually something about Hillary Clinton and Benghazi.
Pretty high,
too. Maybe not lately. All right, so another topic here on our Signals and Noise segment with Precious Yamaguchi and Andrew Gay, and you're welcome to join us, 800-838-3760, and jx@jeffnet.org is DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, which President Trump said he would undo President Obama's order on that within 6 months, giving Congress, in a sense, time to act. I just Googled DACA and media just to get ready for this yesterday, and the hits are all on the lines of the media are asking the wrong questions in the DACA debate. I don't know if you notice the same kind of thing. So what about the media interface with DACA? First of all, do people even really understand, if they're not directly involved, what DACA is?
I think that DACA and people that have come to this country and are on different type of are undocumented, it is so complicated because one person's story is not the same as another person's story. That coming from Los Angeles, I was born and raised and grew up in Los Angeles. When I thought about last night, I was just thinking about how every single best friend I've had or every single close friend I have is either an immigrant or has come from parents of immigrants, not necessarily undocumented, but I feel that in our, especially within Los Angeles, and recently an article in Variety magazine came out about how the entertainment industry really needs to stand up for DACA versus the tech industry, which has already really been vocal about their support in DACA and the way in which childhood arrivals are able to be within in the United States. And for areas like Los Angeles, there's so many different immigrants, different undocumented immigrants. And so this, I felt that area, it really affects us.
Do the portrayals of DACA in the media at least give an accurate sense of what the law, it wasn't the law, it was actually President Obama deciding not to take action under the law, which I guess makes it even more confusing. And on that basis, Andrew Gay, do you feel like that the media are getting the story out there as close to factually as they can?
Well, I think, again, it depends on what your media diet is, right? That, a lot of it is, I think a lot of the media I've seen has been, unfortunately, a lot more sort of, ball commentary about, the politics of it. On Twitter last night and this morning, it's all been about, oh, did Democrats outthink the Republicans in Congress to get a deal with Trump? And they claimed that they had gotten a deal without the wall. And this morning it's no, Trump's tweeting, no, I want the wall. And so a lot of it's sort of this sort of ball game commentary of the politics. And I don't think we get necessarily enough of the media of the really who's affected by this, because these aren't, someone put out a story saying that, you know, there's, I think, it was a statistic about how many DACA individuals have been accused of a crime, and it was like less than 1%. And I'm thinking, well, what's the percentage of the citizens of the United States that have been accused of a crime? Probably more than that. So it's just, again, I think people have this idea in their head of what an undocumented immigrant is. And that narrative, I think the best way to combat that narrative in terms of getting a well-rounded view is really looking at the stories of the people. And so there are media outlets that are doing that, really telling the stories of these dreamers, as they're called.
I did follow up on one of the stories that insisted that the media are asking the wrong questions in the DACA debate, and one of those was from LifeZet, which said that DACA people should be allowed to return home. And in using that phrase, that conjures up a whole other set of issues, because this is not a home that a lot of the DACA recipients ever knew.
Right.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think that a lot of people, they think that they go along with one type of narrative, but there's so many narratives in which a lot of people have, this is a country that they know, the only country that they really, really know. And so even though they might be a different ethnicity, or their parents might have come from a different country, or they were born there, going back to this type of home country, it's not really a home country for them. It's very different.
They may not even know the language.
Yep.
Very true. So moving on to another issue here in our Signals and Noise segment. Let's see, the dangerous work of local reporters in covering big disasters like Harvey and Irma and fires here in the West. I mean, there have been times when I have made fun of the people standing out in the hurricanes. I think they've actually found a way to not stand out in the worst of it now, which is a good thing. But this seems to come up every time there is an issue. It's like, why are these guys standing on the beach? And I saw for the first time this week a good refutation. It's like, we're standing out there so you don't have to.
Right. Yeah, I think I read it was Dan Rather who was the first person to do the whole standing out in the hurricane thing.
And now
reporters say, well, you look lazy if you don't do it now. You kind of have to. I have mixed feelings about the whole you have to stand out in the middle of it type of reporting. Some of that seems like optics. But what I do think is important is that, especially, you know, I saw a lot of these narratives in Harvey. There was a news report literally where an on-air reporter saw a truck driver stuck in his cab, and she went and found a police boat and saved him. And so, and then a few days later, you know, when Donald Trump visited Houston, commented about the U.S. Coast Guard and praising their work. And he's like, yeah, you know, they'll go somewhere where the media doesn't go. And the truth was, lots of media journalists were out there in the storm, putting their own lives in danger, and in many cases, actually saving lives. Saw countless stories about reporters in boats pulling people off of houses and things like that. And so I do think when it comes to natural disasters, local disasters, the local media is invaluable. And that's one of the times where you really get something that you can't get from national media. When you have local, one reporter from Houston was live tweeting their building filling up with water, and they finally had to evacuate from a second story. And so you get that story that you're not going to get from any of the national news coverage.
Plus, in the run up to a storm, I suppose, for that matter, too, the local folks can tell you where the shelters are.
Oh yeah,
facilities are.
I'm from Florida, and in advance of Irma, I followed a local meteorologist that everyone in the state knows that is really trustworthy.
Which was that a TV station?
It's Dennis. Oh gosh, now I'm going to forget
which station though.
It's actually a Tampa station.
Okay,
right. I can tell you the name.
All right. Well, while we're looking for that, why don't we move into the pick three segment? We got about 3 minutes left to talk about our pick three.
It was Dennis Phillips.
Dennis Phillips, okay.
Of Tampa. I'll let Precious go first.
Okay, my pick three are kind of weird. One of them is the Waze app, W-A-Z-E, which is a type of map.
The navigation kind
of
thing.
But I really like it because you can have the navigation voice in Owen Wilson's voice. So every turn you do, he's like, good job, pal. Or like, he'll
be Lightning,
like,
Lightning McQueen, right?
Yeah, Lightning McQueen. He's the voice for Lightning McQueen for Cars 3. So I've been using that because it just makes driving more fun. I would also say the Hamilton app, if you do want to see the show Hamilton, it's amazing. But the app is great because they do a pretty much a daily drawing in which 40 people can buy tickets to Hamilton for $10. So if you find yourself in Los Angeles or New York or Chicago where it's playing, then definitely put that app onto your phone because you could buy tickets for $10. And it's made so people don't have to have like $250 to buy a ticket. And then lastly would be the Muppets Take the Hollywood Bowl, which I saw last week. And if you are a Muppets fan and have seen like Muppets Take Manhattan or anything like that, it's their own like live little talent show that they did.
So is it on the road show, a real life?
Yeah, I think they're planning to have different locations, and it's just like their movies where they are all excited to come to perform but really don't know what they're doing.
I've been really jealous of Precious because I'm a big Muppet fan. So, you know, this week a lot of people have been talking about Hillary Clinton's new book, but my first pick is actually another woman superstar of the 2016 campaign, Katie Turr, a reporter, I believe, with
NBC.
Yeah. Her new book just came out, Unbelievable, My Front Row Seat to the Craziest Campaign in American History. She was embedded in the Trump campaign.
She was singled out for criticism by Trump from the podium.
Secret Service had to go in and protect her from Trump fans. So she has a really incredible inside look at that. My next one is called osfdigistories.tumblr.com. It's an Oregon Shakespeare Festival project in which they commissioned a lot of different video artists to tell stories based on themes. And I'm actually one of them, but the particular piece I wanted to promote was one by Joanne Feinberg, the former director of the Ashland Independent Film Festival. She did a great film about her family's Jewish heritage. And then finally, the fourth season of BoJack Horseman I've been watching on Netflix, and I love that show.
That is a pretty wild cartoon.
It is. It's like I think there was a tweet that I saw, I don't know who said it, but something like, ha ha ha, this cat is a policeman. Oh my gosh, life is so full of despair. Like the show is like hilarious and absurd, but it's also one of these really deep existential shows that deals with suffering and loss, and it's just really interesting.
Wow. BoJack Horseman, OSF Digistories, and Katie Turr's book for Andrew's Pick 3, and then the Muppets Take Hollywood Bowl, the Hamilton app, and the Waze app for Precious in the Pick 3. And that wraps up our Signals and Noise segment for another month. Great job, you guys. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.